With all our discussions about CISOs and the role of the Chief Information Security Officer, when I had the chance to sit down with ConnectWise's at IT Nation Connect, I welcomed the opportunity. I'm joined by Patrick Biggs, who has both government and commercial experience, on this bonus episode of The Business of Tech.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance engineer, he hears things differently. To the untrained ear, everything on his shop floor might sound fine, but he can hear gears grinding or a belt slipping. So he steps in to fix the problem at hand before it gets out of hand. And he knows Granger's got the right product he needs to get the job done, which is music to his ears. Call, click Granger.com, or just stop by. Granger, for the ones who get it done.
Dave Sobel here again with another bonus episode of The Business of Tech. We are on site at ConnectWise's IT Nation Connect event, and I am talking to Patrick Biggs, the Chief Information Security Officer at ConnectWise. Patrick, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me, David. It's a great way to kick off this event with this interview, so pretty excited, so thank you.
I think the easiest place to start is for us to get a sense of how do you approach operationalizing security and the way you think about implementing security at ConnectWise.
So this is a concept and an approach that I've carried with me for many, many years. I probably would say it started off in my government days, but carried into other organizations that I was at, Bank of America, AIG, AWS, and I call it, and it's, again, it's not necessarily mine, but a cyber fusion approach. It's an intelligence-driven approach to cybersecurity operations. It's a very forward-leaning approach. It's not reactive, it's proactive. We would rather find challenges within our own environment before somebody else does. We understand cyberspace and the information security space that, you know, you have to be reactive sometimes, but we are constantly testing ourselves and peeling back the layers to understand where we, you know, where we could be stronger, where we could be more forward leaning in our approach to cyber operations. So yeah.
Now this is gonna sound like an interesting, almost boring question, but it tells a lot about the way that you run the organization. Talk to me about the way your organization, like the org chart, is set up and how it plugs in, because that also shows how it's integrated. And what's your org chart?
So it's actually pretty traditional to an extent. So I'm going to call them pillars, right, from left to right, in no particular priority or order. On the left-hand side, I have a pillar, an organization for identity. Privacy and compliance and governance. So GRC, privacy and compliance, right? Very big space for us for bringing on new partners, but also for the various regulatory rules that we have to follow. So we have to keep that in a good place. But also that has third-party risk as well, which is very important. Moving towards the center, we have a traditional cybersecurity operations group, which is our security operations center, tier one, tier two. Also with our incident response organization, and within that as well, identity and access management. So making sure our whole zero trust, least privilege approach is maintained and executed upon. And then we have what we call our product security and counter threat operations group. So the product security is exactly what you think it would be. It is maintaining the integrity of all of our product security offerings on a proactive basis, continuously scanning, but also to the left of boom mentality for code review and system development lifecycle. So from just idea and inception all the way through release, there's different places where our product security engineers and teams and analysts are engaged with our CTO shop and our product manager shops to ensure that it's being baked in versus layered on. And our counter threat organization, which is our proactive cybersecurity threat hunting, our red teaming, our penetration testing, our intelligence group, and lastly, our insider threat group. So, and then I have Office of the CISO, is myself and some folks that we, more on the metrics reporting out. I report to the board as well, so we have to manage that type of reporting as well. So,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. Now, one of the things you guys have done this past year is you were working with JCRC on some of the
JCDC.
Sorry, JCDC.
Yes,
thank you.
Absolutely.
You were working with JCDC. Yep. Talk to me about your relationship with CISA. Like,
okay.
How are you working with them?
Well, I go way back with CISA. So I actually was one of the founding members of Cybersecurity and Communications Agency, which is now CISA. So the relationships there, actually some of them go back 15, 16 years for me. It was nice, but they reached out to us early in January of this year to be more formally involved with their Joint Cyber Defense Collaborative. So we've been working with them, again, proactively talking about better security for remote monitoring management agents, obviously, you know, part of our key offerings, but also from information sharing and intelligence sharing as well. That's been amazing, and be able to pass that down to our partners, and I'll be able to bake it into our managed SOC for our customers that rely on that, but also just pushing it just because it's the right thing to do to anyone that we can, as well. And then they actually, this spring, they formally actually asked us to be an official member of the Joint Cyber Defense Collaborative. So I know that's a number, probably I think 50 to 100 companies worldwide, or excuse me, within the US that are part of that. So that was pretty cool. So.
Can you give me like an example of success with that relationship this year?
Oh yeah, so they did. So they released a few products specifically, properly security RMM, remote management tools. So we were part of the development process of those articles, and those best practices. So we're doing that. We're actually helping them now as well on secure by design approaches as well. But also on a weekly basis, they pass us intelligence that, again, as I said, that's really the more contextual thing. And they say, hey, listen, we're seeing some bad folks doing some bad things, and here are some indicators that you probably should take a look at and perhaps block. And let us know if you're seeing it as well, because it's a bi-directional thing. So, yeah.
Well, I like to highlight this kind of work because it's sometimes popular to shake your fist at big government and say, like, oh, but there's a lot of really interesting collaboration that's beneficial to both sides.
It goes back to my legacy there is helping critical infrastructure owner operators. It's funny, I was way back in the day leading assessments with the government and really trying to explain to people, we're from the government, we're here to help. Fast forward now. Right, on the other, the coin is flipped, right? But many of ConnectWise partners, if not all of them, are part of, they're owners and operators of critical infrastructure. MSPs manage water treatment plants. They manage, you know, chemical plants, their IT departments, right? And if you know, inversely, that those are targets, right, for badness to happen perhaps. And the US government has to take a stance and try to protect that as best they can. But they also understand that they're not, you know, maybe some of them, it takes a public-private partnership, so, yeah.
So I want to ask a sort of broad philosophical question,
oh,
right?
Okay.
Because you're involved with advising ConnectWise on a lot of the way they're thinking about security.
Yes.
And there's you talked about Zero Trust as an initiative, mm-hmm. which is we're all moving towards a Zero Trust environment, ideally.
Yep.
We know it's perfection that we'll never quite attain.
Sure.
At the same time, we're working with a set of products that mm-hmm. oftentimes want very aggressive administrative access, right? How do you think about balancing that dynamic between trying to have things as minimally trust as possible versus tools that want complete access?
It's a true understanding of your environment, right? Understanding your attack surface and it's the analogy of knowing how many doors and windows you have in your house, right? And do you need them all open at the same time, right? And it is to your point, it can be very complicated because the nature of those products, right, is to have a lot of access. But it doesn't mean they have to have every window and door open to the house. So it's an understanding, it's an educational, it's more of a people process versus a technology problem, right? That's where I always try to say, it's not always the tech side of the house. So it's understanding your environments, really understanding the path to your crown jewels, right? And putting up roadblocks, if not closing doors to those paths, right? But obviously still maintaining operational efficiencies and functions that can't be stopped. So it's a balance, yeah.
All right, I'm going to ask the fun vendor question that I've asked because I've been telling my listeners to start asking vendors this. So I'm going to take my own advice and ask as well.
Great.
Where are you thinking about passkeys in terms of ConnectWise and its product sets as we try and move toward a passwordless future?
That's a tough challenge that's a people and process challenge. It's an educational challenge. Mm-hmm. It's a challenge of what people just used to for so long, right? It is such a single point of failure for us, right? Obviously, I always would push, multi-factor authentication. Obviously there's a password involved with that, right? We're going to be moving towards, I think, I mean, not necessarily ConnectWise, but the industry at writ large, it is more, I think you're going to see more of that trusted device acknowledgement movement, right? Where if that device is not exhibiting normal behavior, right, in an environment where it is, where it has been seen before, it's not going to be allowed access. Will passwords be going away? I will only know time soon, because I think that is just such a big, we'll say, cultural change to how folks work. I'm not gonna pontificate on should it be, but I would say you're gonna see more on the leaning towards that. Really, is that zero trust, trusted device approach to identity and access management. So yeah.
Well, I'm gonna ask a follow up then, Google is leaning really heavily into this.
Yes.
Now they're a consumer product, but
right.
at the same time they're leaning into it pretty heavily with it's now being activated by default.
Yes.
Microsoft leaning pretty heavily into trying to move towards password. They've rolled out their pieces,
right.
built into Windows Hello.
Right.
And I want to get a little bit of a sense of industry-wide, mm-hmm. if we're thinking about MSPs and IT services companies as
yep.
protecting all this,
yep.
how much do we need to rotate towards this, from your opinion?
I think we have to do what we'll call, again, on the proactive side, lean towards that. And we have to really start exposing and talking about the concept, right? That's the first, mm-hmm. it's always the problem, right? Acknowledge that there's a challenge, right? And,
right.
and start showing folks, and it gets good at great examples with Microsoft and Google. Again, and they have a consumer home user environment,
right?
But that is different from the business side, right? If you think about that. So again, leaning towards on the educational side and showing, the validity of how it's not going to harm their business, right, per se.
Mm-hmm.
It's change. Everyone is they're resistant to change. So I think step one is showing the security of it, but also the flexibility of it and how, how it is. I mean, it's just evolution, right? So I think it's going to be a hard charging educational process, and really understanding, understanding the intricacies of deploying something like that, right? It's not always one size fits all either. So
right.
And that's some of the larger organizations might have challenges with, because they try to do a one size fits all. So we have to understand what would be the more specific needs of our partner base before we kind of approach it like that. So yeah.
So where are you thinking the key needs of the partner base are right now when it comes to security?
From just a general security standpoint?
General security perspective.
I'll get on my soapbox because I'm, I run a bit, I secure a business. I secure a medium-sized business, 4,000 or 5,000 employees globally, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'll speak to that from that perspective. And we talked about it a little bit is vulnerability management, 1,000%. That's such an easy answer to give you, but it's still folks need to understand vulnerability management, right? And actually proactive, and again, understand their space, but also third party, say identity access management. What are entitlements that your third party apps have, right? What are the defaults that they're enabled when you connect with them from an API standpoint? Are you actually peeling the layer back and understanding what the default access to those apps are? Because I'll tell you, that's some of the larger breaches, right? That's where the launch points have been. So,
right.
That's something I've been trying to talk to folks more about, is understand that attack surface. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think giving you some space to get on your soapbox is useful because sometimes it's the basic things that we're not focusing enough. I mean, it is almost
always
the basic things that we're not.
Security awareness training as well, phish testing, things like that. We are very aggressive at ConnectWise internally about testing our own employees. Very forward leaning on that, but also from a security awareness training, talking about some of the recent breaches that happened and tell your employees how they happened and how they could be susceptible to that. We do that all the time. We talked about the MGM hack, right? And say, listen, when somebody calls you up, right, no one internally is going to be asking for this information, that type of approach.
Right.
Yeah.
How do you define aggressive? You say you're very aggressive about that. How do you define that?
Talk. Don't sit behind a closed door. In a sense, make yourself and the functions that we represent, right, are my leaders and even below them. Having them, it's more of a grassroots efforts, right? And that's how really change is made and positive change is made. So we empower them to go talk to their counterparts on, say, the product development side of the house or the HR side of the house, legal, you name it. My partnership with the CTO and our CIO is amazing, right? We talk constantly, and I would probably venture to say that may not be necessarily the case of large organizations. I've seen it can be very adversarial, you know, we make decisions together sometimes. You know, it's great. So, yeah. So that's the, we set the tone at the top, right? And I believe it feeds down. Any organization has its challenges, and you know, they're, you know, what we call towers of excellence, right? That we're always trying to break down. So, yeah.
You live in a world of one failure becomes the headline, right? I mean, like, yeah. We laugh about it, but yeah. But it's an impossible goal,
it's
right?
Zero-sum game.
It's yep. A zero-sum game. Yep. The attackers only have to be right once. You right. have to be right all the time.
Yep.
So instead, how do you define success in terms of delivering and measuring security?
I would say I define success by, well, by surviving the day and the week and the month, right? In a sense, but life is not about survival, right? It's about understand. It's about the maturity journey. So I gauge myself, and we grade ourselves from a maturity standpoint. We're very project oriented based, and we have to, you know, we look again. It goes back to what I talked about before: is that proactive, identifying gaps ourselves and shoring up those gaps. So we're not advancing if we're not finding gaps. Right, and they could be some of the more micro gaps, right? So that is one of the things that we grade ourselves for success is, are we advancing upon our own goals and you know, projects in a sense of pushing the needle forward. And it's not always a technology implementation solution. Again, back to people and process. So, yeah.
So I'm going to ask a bit more of a outside of business question.
Okay.
You're in a job that could be perceived as very high stress. How do you manage mental health in that environment?
Oh, that's a great, great question. And it's something I talk with my leaders about all the time. I put them in timeout sometimes in a positive way, right? Identifying times where it's appropriate, and I'll say, listen, I don't want to hear or see from you today. Right. And I said, listen, I need this to happen as well. Sometimes you gotta take a break from the keyboard. I fitness is a big thing for me, right? Is maintaining that mental. I take a break every day and I walk 5 miles, right? Takes me a little bit, an hour and a half. I take calls though sometimes on it, probably shouldn't do. But it's just talking about it. Again, it goes back to what we were talking before, is identifying the challenge and communicating and saying it's okay that you're not necessarily reachable, you know, at any given time, as long as there's somebody that is, right? Mm-hmm. Trust in team. That's the biggest thing for that as well, is to trust the team and be able to take a step back. So, yeah. Yep.
So if you could sort of impart that one bit of knowledge, the do this right now for people that are thinking about making a proactive change in their security posture, what would that be?
Again, it goes back to, do not wait for something to happen to you, right? And again, it doesn't have to be elaborate in the sense of test yourself, right? You know, and it's something as simple as fish testing, but also is really on the basic proactive threat hunting or the red teaming side of the house. If you see a breach that happened somewhere in the news, here's a great thing. Take a look at what happened. It just might get as much information from it and understand where are your weak points in relationships to that, right? Be it more introspective, right? Folks are always looking, we're always watching what's coming in, but be more introspective in understanding where your risks are, and not all risks are created equal, right? Not all vulnerabilities are created equal for organizations. You don't necessarily have to spend, an inordinate amount of money to a vulnerability that is not necessarily applicable to your organization or to your product, right? So it's just understanding your space and, again, is holding yourself accountable. All right, there you go.
So you brought it up, and you mentioned red teaming, and I've been thinking a lot about that in the context of AI, particularly with the executive orders that have now come around, thinking about it. Mm-hmm. How is AI changing or modifying, or maybe not, your approach in security? How are you applying it? Or are you thinking about it?
We're thinking about it more on the, and it's, you know, on the tier one side of the house, right? A lot of what tier one SOC analysts, tier two SOC analysts, it's a very repetitive job, right? Form fields are the same, right? So employing more, and I would say, you know, hyper automation, machine learning, you know, yes, it's probably sprinkling some AI on some of those functionalities, right? But also looking for behavior. My only patent is in AI for cyber operations, and that was in 2017, right? But all that was doing was looking for abnormal, it's using, leveraging models to look for abnormal behavior that doesn't exist in an environment. So that is where we're moving towards internally, is again, baselining our own behavior and understanding what is considered not normal, and then applying tier two to tier three resources, which are very, you know, those are the crown jewel resources, right? Then applying them to those versus you're looking for a needle in a stack of needles, right? So that approach. But also on the reverse side is the attacks that are coming at us, and understanding, you know, what the adversaries are going to be using, right? And having to up our game as well, because the phishing emails are getting so much more advanced, right? And be able to detect for that. But also looking for, you know, like anti, you know, AI detection capabilities, right? So phishing emails, before they were really bad grammar and really poor English, now they're too perfect, right? But okay, can we detect for that? Too perfect, right? Goes back to behavioral baselining, so, yeah.
Well, Patrick, this has been fascinating. Yeah. I really appreciate you joining me and educating me a little bit more on the listeners on security. Thanks for joining me.
This was great. Thank you so much. And hopefully you guys are going to be sticking around and enjoying the conference too. So, yep.
We'll be here the whole week. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, Harry. Appreciate it. Yep.
Looking to make your monitoring offering premium? A way to differentiate your capabilities? How about being able to see into your clients' IT rooms with thermal imaging with 768 monitoring points combined with ambient temperature and humidity? Live and recorded video with motion detection, offering better visibility than being there physically. Sentry from RF Code is the answer. Plug it in, scan the QR code, and you're done. Sentry helps you know about IT issues before your clients do. And listeners get 30% off your order of hardware and service with code MSPRadio on checkout. Visit rfcode.com/MSPRadio and ensure you're never asked why you didn't know again. The Business of Tech is written by me, Dave Sobel, under ethics guidelines posted at businessof.tech. This episode was edited and produced by Picture This Video. If you like the content, please make sure to hit that like button and follow and subscribe. It's the free and easy way to support the show and help us grow. You can also check out our Patreon, where you can join the Business of Tech community at patreon.com/MSPRadio or buy our Why Do We Care merch at businessof.tech. Finally, if you're interested in advertising on the show, visit MSPRadio.com/engage. Thanks for listening today, and I will talk to you again on the next episode of The Business of Tech.
Part of the MSP Radio Network.